It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. We just heard about technology being used to help fight police misconduct, technology being used in medical research. Here's another angle on using technology, in a surprising way, to try to stem rhinoceros slaughter in Africa. Poachers skin the rhinos and cut their horns off to be sold as a high-priced folk cure, primarily in Asia. Rhino horn powder is thought to be useful for everything from fever reduction to cancer treatment. And the rhino horn trade is growing, threatening the animals. A bill in Olympia would make it illegal to sell or trade any elephant or rhino material. But one local biotech company has a different approach. Matthew Marcus is co-founder of Penbient. They genetically engineer a powder that's biologically the same as rhino horn powder. Matthew Marcus explained to my colleague Marcy Silman why he and his partner decided to join the market instead of beat it.
We hope that we don't have to play this zero-sum game where either the rhinos survive or the cultural traditions of Asia survive. I think there should be some sort of middle ground where people can continue to use some of their traditional medicines and practices, maybe in an altered or technologically advanced way, and the rhinos can still thrive and live in the wild in Africa.
What prompted you to get into this business that you're in?
So maybe about 15 years ago, I guess, there was sort of a pressure on rhinos. And so at that time, I had written down in a journal, it would be kind of interesting if you could manufacture these things. Couldn't that be some way of satisfying the demand for it? And now I think that the technology is starting to come online and that, you know, the poaching crisis is, again, rearing its ugly head. And so it would be a good time to kind of pursue this opportunity now.
So you had this idea 15 years or so ago. When and why did you actually get to work on it?
Maybe about a year ago now. I left the startup I was working at in mobile technology, and I just started really intensely looking at doing research on the issue and starting to do surveys in Vietnam and actually going to Vietnam and interviewing people who use rhino horn in Vietnam to try to get a better understanding of what exactly is going on.
What made you think that you could actually synthesize it or recreate it out of other substances in a lab?
Well, I was working with George, my co-founder, on testing substances imported from China, sort of like a hobby. And we were using like spectrographic techniques to determine whether or not these things were true or authentic or not. And I was like, well, couldn't we figure out some way to mimic the spectrographic trace of rhino horn, you know, or some product like that? And he agreed that we probably could. And then he started working on that more and more intensely until he started getting closer and closer to mimicking it.
What is a spectrographic trace?
So it's sort of like a fingerprint of the chemicals that are inside, you know, a mixture and a compound. And so basically it basically just graphs out the vibrations of different molecules inside the compound or substance, and it kind of makes a trace that looks like a graph.
So essentially you looked at what that would look like in a rhino horn, and then you are duplicating it with more rhino horn, or what are you using?
Well, we're just using different biochemical processes to sort of purify some of the components that may be in rhino horn but can also be in other substances, and figuring out, you know, the certain percentages of these different substances in the actual horn and putting these things all together in a series of operations to come up with a final product that is very, very similar to real rhino horn.
But it's not a real rhino horn.
Well, obviously, no, it's not a real rhino horn, yeah.
So you've got this spectrograph, you've got this chemical resonance, all these things. How do you actually take that print and make something that looks or seems or acts like rhino horn but isn't rhino horn?
Rhino horn is consumed in a lot of different forms. So it's commonly ground up into a powder in Asia and then mixed with water and consumed. So you have a liquid form, a powder form, small chunks of horn form, I guess, and then the whole pieces of horn. And so we're starting, obviously, the most basic thing is the powders, and started working on that problem alone. And we built some prototypes, and one of those prototypes is I did take to Vietnam and had people who use, you know, normal rhino horn, wild rhino horn, compare it as far as the physical properties are concerned, the characteristics they're used to see how close of a match it was.
I'm talking with Matthew Marcus, and he's got a startup company that is making something that will look and feel and act like rhino horn powder but isn't made out of a rhino horn, in an attempt to at least make a little indent in the poaching business. So you mentioned that you went to Vietnam to talk to people. Do you think that folks who buy real powdered or somehow real rhino horn would actually buy a manufactured synthetic rhino horn?
Yeah, in one of our surveys, I think we found that about 45% of people said they consider buying rhino horn made in a lab, which is a very general sort of statement, but that only 15% consider they'd use water buffalo horn, which is kind of the preferred or official substitute for rhino horn. So there, we know at least there's a gap there where people could, you know, come in and more people will be accepting of the artificial horn, apparently, than the current, you know, proposed substitute. So that's promising.
What did they use it for?
Rhino horn right now is sort of like magic. In the traditional, in the past, it was kind of used as a cooling agent. So you could kind of think of it as maybe a fever reducer or whatever. But since that time, it's gone on to become an aphrodisiac, a hangover cure, a cure for Japanese encephalitis, a cure even for potentially cancer. So it's kind of really expanded its mythology in that area.
Is this something that would need FDA approval?
Potentially. I mean, rhino horn, I guess if you were going to ingest it, it falls under the sort of a supplements category. Or in Asia, there's something that's akin to supplements called functional foods. So with that route, yes, there is regulatory things that we have to basically, boxes we have to check and approvals we have to meet.
Is this something you've ever tried on yourself?
I did consume some of the prototype powder. It's ingestible. I'm still here. My co-founder has had it too. So
it's good. I verify that I see you. Did you take it for a specific reason or just to feel what it felt like to ingest it?
I think we took it primarily because we were going to take it to Vietnam and we didn't want anybody to really use it in Vietnam because it's not cleared for use, but we're presenting this as something that eventually will be consumed. And so, you know, we should be, I guess, you know, what's the quote, eating your own dog food as a startup. So, yeah, I mean, that's not very elegant, but yeah, that was the idea.
How'd you feel after you took it?
Okay, it's got a very unusual kind of taste. I mean, it's very musky. I guess that's sort of like what the real smell and flavor of the horn is. At least I've been told. But I don't know. I mean, it's not my cup of tea, but...
But other people might want it.
Might want it, yeah.
Rhino horn powder. Matthew Marcus, co-founder of a local biotech company called Pembiant. Marcus said that if all goes well, Pembiant should have a small batch of rhino horn powder ready in 6 months. This is The Record on KUOW.